Today's shir is for a schus is donated by Dr. Yosef and Mrs. Yael Gurevich in honor of their grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. Moshe Rubin. Today's shir is schus for Shalom ben Bracha for Refuah Shleima. Today's shir is Masechet Ksubos, Daf Tzadik, and we will begin on Daf Tzadik, Amud Aleph, at the Mishnah, four lines from the top. Says the Mishnah, Katan Shesir Ovav. If there's a katan who was married off by his father while he was still a katan, and we know that a katan does not have the ability to really get married because he's still a katan, and the father wrote to this woman a ksuba in the name of the katan, and now the katan becomes a godly, he becomes 13 years old, and he's still married to that woman. So even though the ksuba was written while he was only a katan, and as we just explained, any halachic transaction done by a katan is not valid, here in this case, ksubasa kiyamis. The ksuba that was written, even though it was written while he was still only a katan, will be considered a valid katan, valid ksuba, shamanas kain kaima. That was the condition upon which he got married, that remained married. And that's why the Ritva says, in order for this ksuba that was written while he was a katan to be able to be activated and to be considered a ksuba that has to be honored, he has to do an act of bia after he becomes a gadol. Because if he never did an act of bia after he became a gadol, so then he's just the whole kedushin, just the kedushin of a katan, which we just described, are meaningless. But if he does a new kedushin after, he does a new act of bia after he becomes a gadol, that activates the ksuba. And as Rashi explains, even though this ksuba was written while this individual was still a katan, it doesn't make a difference. Since at this point he's already a gadol, and he, that act of bia that takes place after he's a gadol has the ability to make that ksuba obligated on him. And the same, the others say that the chiddush is that the Tosfos Rit says this chiddush, that this katan married this woman while she was a psula. And as we've learned so many times in our masechta, the ksuba of a psula is mosaim zuz, 200 zuz. But now when the ksuba is really becoming activated, she's no longer psula. At this point, they were married till now, and she's a bula. So we would think that if that's the case, the ksuba, yes, by him doing a bia now, it activates the ksuba, but it should only activate a ksuba of a mana, because at this point, she's no longer a psula. At this point, she's a bula. Teaches us the Mishnah Chiddush that since he did the bia, and the bia was done based on the original act of marriage, which at that time she was a psula, that's enough to make him be obligated in the ksuba of a bula. However, says Tosfos, the very masculine Shanu, as we've learned, and we're actually going to learn this many times still, that a ksuba is a very serious obligation that the husband takes upon himself, meaning that the husband's, all of his assets are mortgaged to his ksuba. So what would be the halacha here, discusses Tosfos, if he had assets? Are his assets mortgaged to the ksuba? Or we don't say that his assets are mortgaged to the ksuba under these circumstances because he didn't write the ksuba when he was a gadol. So this is a discussion that the Rishonim have. And as I said, Tosfos' opinion is that since this ksuba was not written when he was a gadol, it's only a ksuba that we're activating now, later on in life. That ksuba, although it's quite serious, it's not serious enough that he should be obligated. It's not serious enough that he should be obligated to pay that the lkuchis, anybody who bought assets from him, should suffer because of it. And the halacha actually is that the lkuchis will be not subject to her being able to take the ksuba payment if the ksuba payment becomes due. Continues the Mishnah. Similar case. Gershon is gar ishto imay. A couple that got married when they weren't Jewish, but for some reason, even though they weren't Jewish, he wrote her a ksuba. And then they become gerim, and they are going to be now married as Jews. The ksubasa kiyamis, the ksuba that they wrote, even though that ksuba was written when they weren't Jewish, the halacha is that ksuba becomes activated, shabanas kaima. So the achronim ask, how could that ksuba that was written when they were goyim be considered a valid ksuba? We know that for ksuba to be valid, it has to go through a kinyan. There has to be a kinyan, but people who aren't Jewish aren't able to make a kinyan. So Rabbi Chanan answers that a ksuba is one of these type of documents that doesn't need a very strong kinyan to make it effective. Says Rabbi Chanan, if it would require a very serious act of kinyan, so the kinyan that was done by Akum is not a valid kinyan. But this is a kinyan that doesn't require a very, this is a type of transaction that doesn't need a very strong kinyan, and therefore even though it was written by Akum, it's effective. The Ayala Sashachar answers that actually this was a special Takanas Chachamim, that the Takanas Chachamim was that the ksuba that was written when they're not Jewish should still be valid for when they are Jewish. But Rikvega asks a different question. He says, we could understand the first halacha that we learned in our Mishnah. The first halacha we learned in our Mishnah was that the ksuba was written when he was a katan. And as we could well understand, the ksuba written by a katan doesn't really have much validity, because the ksuba written by a katan is written by a katan, and a katan can't do kinyonim. But asks Rikvega, Akum, people who aren't Jewish, are still able to do kinyonim. So since people who aren't Jewish are still able to do kinyonim, asks Rabbi Chanan, why is there an issue here? The kinyon is being done by two non-Jewish people, obligated themselves into whatever they obligated themselves. And once they obligated themselves, they should be held responsible to that obligation. So of course the ksuba should be valid. Why would we think that it's not valid? So B'chanan says, so the B'kvega says, the Beis Yaakov actually says a very big chiddush. He says a ksuba that's written, even if it's written by non-Jews, it's written with the intention that these non-Jews are trying to get married. These two non-Jews are trying to get married. And they're getting married not as Jews. They're obviously not Jewish, so they're not getting married as Jews. Now, says the Beis Yaakov, when they're getting married now, says the Beis Yaakov, they're getting married based on that marriage that took place when they were non-Jews expired. And we would think, therefore, that with the expiration of that marriage, there is an expiration of the ksuba. That's the chiddush here, that the ksuba doesn't get expired, even though the marriage got expired. There's an interesting question that the Paiskim discuss. So what is the halacha if a couple were not Jewish, and they were married, and now they're both megayer, and they have a Jewish wedding? The halacha, so certainly they have to have a proper Jewish wedding with a chuppah, a kedushin, and the sheva brachas. So the question is, what about the sheva brachas that we make for a couple as they get married? And again, we have to realize that this marriage that they ever had before is not halachically recognized. So the Paiskim, however, say that just like the halacha is, the machs grushosoi, if somebody was married, divorced his wife, and remarried his wife, when he's allowed to remarry his wife, there are no sheva brachas. There's a chuppah of a kedushin and sheva brachas under the chuppah, but there is no regular sheva brachas. So too will be the halacha here. Says the Gemara Amar Afuna Lo Shana, this that we said, that the ksuba gets activated after they become gedolim after he becomes a gadol, or after they're megayir, lo shana el mona masayim. We're only speaking about the basic ksuba. Aval toisus, if in the original ksuba there was a toisus ksuba, ein lo. That she's not entitled to. Rav Yehuda Omer, af afil tesefus yesh lo, she's entitled, and she's entitled to the entire ksuba. So toisus asks, according to Rav Huna, that she's only entitled to the mona masayim, why does the Mishnah write the words to ksubasa kayemis? Doesn't the word ksubasa kayemis seem to indicate that the entire ksuba is still activated? Says the Gemara, that says Tosfos, all the Mishnah is teaching us, which as we learned the Mishnah is a very bechidish, that the ksuba that was written in a way that wasn't a valid ksuba, still has the ability to become a valid ksuba. That's all the Mishnah means to teach us. Meisvei asked the Gemara on Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, chitshu, if a katan married a woman, or a non-Jew married a woman, and now the katan became an adult, the non-Jew was mezgayer, chitshu, and they added something they had a ksuba, to their non-valid marriage, and now they add something to their new ksuba, notz mashe chitshu. So we see that chitshu in, only if they modify the ksuba, that's an indication that we should take in consideration the entire ksuba. But loy chitshu, if they didn't modify the original ksuba, loy. Says the Gemara, Eimer, what the Braisa means to say is, not only, says Rabbi Yehuda, is this woman entitled to her whole original ksuba, but the woman is entitled to what is added to the ksuba now as well. Ask the Gemara v'loy tani hachi, but there's a braisa that explicitly disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, because the braisa says chitshu, if they modified the ksuba after he became a gadol or after he was megayir, noitus masha chitshu loy chitshu. But the braisa says here clearly, if they were relying on the original ksuba and there was no modification to the ksuba, you only get the basic suba and nothing more. This is clearly a refutation of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. But says the Gemara, what caused Rabbi Yehuda to make this mistake? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda masnisen at they say, the wording of our Mishnah sort of made him make a mistake. Since the Mishnah keeps on using the words ksubasa kiyemes, that means a kula ksuba. Kula milsukai, it's referring to an entire ksuba. But that's not what the Rishna meant. Vlahiya ik ksubikai. Says Ritva, if we're saying, and now everybody agrees, because even Rabbi Yehuda says the Gemara agrees, that the woman is only entitled to the ik ksuba, so it turns out that this document that we have in front of us is really an inaccurate document, because the document speaks about a Tosfos ksuba. So shouldn't that disqualify the entire document? So the Ritva says that there's an assumption, there's an umdana included in this Gemara, that when the husband is marrying her after he became a gadol, when the ger is marrying her after he became a ger, he only meant to give the basic ksuba. And the Rebbe Chanan seems to say, going back to something that we discussed earlier in our shiur, we asked earlier in our shiur, but there's no kinyan here. So we answered that a ksuba doesn't need a kinyan. So Rebbe Chanan, I think, in trying to explain the Ritva, says that which part of the ksuba doesn't need a kinyan? The basic part of the ksuba doesn't need a kinyan. And that's why it gets activated as soon as this person becomes a gadol. It gets activated as soon as he becomes a ger. But the Tosfos ksuba needs a kinyan. And a kinyan that was done before he was a Jew, and a kinyan that was done before he's a gadol, is obviously not an act of a kinyan, and that's why the Tosfos ksuba cannot be activated. Hanu lach kaisav l'ishtoi, hanu lach kaisav l'ishtoi, hanu lach kaisav l'ishtoi. As we've discussed many times in our Masechta, one of the rules that was implemented in Ksubis is a Ksubis benin dichrin. As we discussed this subject quite extensively earlier in our Masechta on Daf Nun Beis, the Gemara says that in the ksuba is included that if one husband, if a man married two women, and one wife brought a very sizable nadunya into the marriage, and the other one did not. Or there could be a situation where one wife will have more sons than the other wife. And the father-in-law who wants to give the nadunya, and we want to encourage him to give the nadunya, is concerned that if his daughter dies before her husband, if his daughter dies before the husband, and then when the husband ultimately dies, who will be the yarshim of that money? The yarshim of that money will actually end up being the children or the of his daughter's tzara. And as we can well imagine, the relationship between the two wives, as the name implies, tzara, is never a very healthy relationship. In order to avoid that concern, what Chazal said is we write a ksubas benendichrin. And that writes that if the husband dies, when the husband dies, if his wife's predeceased him, they won't, all the sons won't just divide the Yerusha equally, but rather what will happen, says the ksubas benendichrin, that each son, each family, each wife's sons will take their mother's nadunya, and then the rest of the Yerusha will be divided. In the coming sugyas, in this perek, we're going to be learning quite extensively the halachas of ksubas benendichrin. It's interesting to point out, as we've learned in our shiurim, the ksubas benendichrin, as we're going to be learning in this perek, was a fundamental element of every ksuba. We don't have the ksubas benendichrin bezman hazeh for a number of reasons. One was because it's very difficult to work with a ksubas benendichrin because we have to have a very clear understanding of the value of the assets that was given that were written into the ksuba. Another reason that I saw is that Chazal instituted the ksuba benendichrin because Chazal were concerned that a father is going to give most of his assets to his sons and not to his daughters for the reason that we just gave. But Bizman Azeh explained the Paiskim that it's just the opposite. We see that parents typically give more to their daughters than to the sons, and because the concerns that they had in those days aren't really active Bizman Azeh. And because of that, we don't have to do anything to encourage parents to give to their daughters equal to the sons. The daughters get more anyway. So says the Mishnah, Misha Yonasi Shtei Nosim, somebody was married to two women, Umeis Rishayna, and the first wife dies, and the husband dies, Harishayna Kadems Lashniya. So there are now two widows. Who collects first? Especially, obviously, this halach is relevant when there are limited assets. The halach is that the first wife who had a mortgage on this husband before the second wife, she collects a ksuba before the second wife. Yishayna kedems l'shniya. Let's say before these two wives had the opportunity to collect the ksubas, they passed away, so their children yarshin that those rights. And here too, the halacha is yarsha rishona, the yarshim of the first wife, kaidmal yarsha shniya, precedes the yarshim of the second wife. And many rishonim say that there really is no chiddush here. The shita wants to say that the chiddush is that we know that to collect the ksuba, for the yarshim to collect the ksuba, as we're also going to learn in our perek, sometimes a shvua has to be made. The Mishnah is teaching us that even if the second wife's yarshim made a shvua before the first wife's yarshim, that doesn't give them the right to collect first. The right to collect first is always given to the first wife. Nosar Shoinim. But now the Mishnah speaks about a different situation. A person married the first wife, Umeisa, and she died before him. And then Nosar Shnia. And then he has a second wife, Umaisu, and he dies before she does. Shniyav Yarsha Kaidma Yarsha Rishana. Here the second wife comes, the Yarsha of the second wife She, if she's still alive, or Yashim, if she's no longer alive, come before the first wife. Why? Because the first wife's children, the second wife's children, there's an obligation on this husband's estate to pay off the ksuba. The ksuba's benin dichrin is only a Yerusha. And the halacha is that chayvus, obligations that an estate have to satisfy precede the Yerusha. So since ksuba's benin dichrin is Yerusha, they can't come equal or before the chayvus, which is obligated to the second wife. Begins the Gemara. That the fact that the Mishnah used the words that the first wife comes before the second wife, that it means, which would be a much stronger wording. It's obvious that our Mishnah is trying to teach us that even though, as we just learned in the Mishnah very explicitly, that if the husband died and he had two wives, the first wife precedes the second wife. But if the second wife seized assets before the first wife, we don't take it away. There's a machlokes rishonim. Most Rishonim say that when we speak about the second wife seizing assets and holding on to them, that's only if she seized real estate, but not by Metatlin. But there are some that suggest that the same halacha would be by Metatlin. Shmamina, and what is our Mishnah teaching us? Says the Gemara, our Mishnah is teaching us, again, the case is where a husband died and he left two wives. We just learned that when a husband dies and he leaves two wives, the wives are considered bali chayiv. The wives are considered like individuals to whom money is owed. And just like when a person dies and they leave over assets, and they're limited assets, and there's an order. The first bal chayiv, the older bal chayiv, the bal chayiv that came first, comes before the second bal chayiv. Here too, we're going to learn bal chayiv meucher shekada v'gava. If the second bal chayiv, who really he should be collecting second, seized assets before the first one, mashgava gava, we don't take it away from him. Says the Gemara, loylem emalach, we can actually say that that isn't true. Mashgava loy gava. If the second bal chayiv took before the first bal chayiv, we don't give him that option. Umay harishayne kodemus l'shniyah, when the Mishnah said the words, harishayne kodemus l'shniyah, don't understand those words as some sort of a lechatchila din, that the first goes before the second. Rather, the Mishnah legamri ktani, the Mishnah says that the first has full rights before the second wife. And if the second wife will try to grab before the first wife, it's meaningless. Kiritanan, and the Mishnah says that the word kodemes could mean a very strong meaning, even though it seemingly only means that they go first, but not with that full strength. Because the Mishnah Masechta Bava Basra teaches us when the Mishnah discusses there the order of Yerusha. So the Mishnah says, Ben Kaidim Labas, a son comes before a daughter. Now we know that the halacha is not just that a son comes before a daughter in Yerusha, that when there's a son and daughter, the daughter gets no Yerusha. So you see that even though the Mishnah over there used the word kaidim, it's not just to be understood they comes first or second. Kaidim has a much stronger meaning. Here too, we're going to explain that kaidim has a much stronger meaning. And what kaidim means here is that the first bal chayiv, or in the case of our Mishnah, the first wife comes totally, totally before the second wife or before the second bal chayiv. Continues the Gemara. Ikadami, but there's a different version of this Gemara. Midalaktani in kad mishni v'tafsa emet siyim biyada. The fact that the Mishnah did not say that if the second wife seized assets before the first wife, emet siyim biyada, that we will let her keep it. Mechlal, isn't that an indication, suggests the Kadamri, the Kadmashniya Vitafsa, that if she would grab before the first one, which she shouldn't do, but if she did, the Mishnah, by not teaching us this halacha, mafkinimino, it's a raya that we don't let it hold on to it. Shmamino. So isn't this a raya? The Bachoiv Mukha Shakadva Kova Mashagova Lagova. If a second Bachoiv grabbed, it's meaningless. says the Gemara, it's not necessarily compelling proof. That if the second wife or the second Baal Chayiv seized assets before the first wife or the first Baal Chayiv, the halacha would be Masha Gava Gava, we will let it hold on to it. Just I the Tanei, so why did the Mishnah just use the word Kadma? Why didn't we learn the Mishnah saying that if she did grab it, we let her have it? In other words, Taisus explains that this is not a halacha that we could have learned from any, the Mishnah should have said this halacha explicitly. Says the Gemara, I did the Tanei, since at the end of the Mishnah, we're going to learn when the first wife predeceased the husband and the second wife did not, that their halacha is kodma yarsha yishayana, and their halacha is kodma means kodma, that if the yarsha it will everybody will agree there's no question that it's meaningless. That's why in the ratio we use the similar words, harishayana kodemus lishniya, even though it's not just kodemus, the halacha is much stronger, that if she it may be that if she grabbed it, she could keep it. We learned in the Mishnah, if he married the first wife and she predeceased him, and then he married a second wife and he predeceased her, the halach is that shniyah v'yarsheha, that the second wife and her yarshim come before the first wife. Shmamina, says the Gemara, this halacha, this din that our Mishnah just taught us, from this din we could extrapolate plus. From this din we could extrapolate three halachas regarding the ksubas bin dichron that we discussed earlier in our shir. Shmamino, achs b'chayev, achs b'maisei, that if one wife died while he was still alive, and one died after he died, yesh lan ksubas bin dichron, the halacha of ksubas bin dichron applies. And what's the chiddush? The second wife's children, as we explained, are getting their mother's ksuba as yarshim because their mother outlived the husband. And if a husband predeceases his wife, they are entitled to their mother's ksuba as yarshim. The first wife's, as a baal choyv, not as baal yarshim, as baal choyv, he owes that money. He owes his wife a ksuba. The state owes the wife a ksuba. The first wife's children who are collecting the ksuvos ben dichron are getting it as yarshim. And there would be a suggestion, says the Gemara, there could be a thought that in this situation, Chazal did not institute ksuvos ben dichron. Because by instituting ksuvos ben dichron, we're causing a quarrel between the children of the second wife and the children of the first wife. Because they could say that they're also yarshim. The children of the second wife are yarshim. But they're going to say the first wife's children are getting a bigger share of the Yerusha than the second wife's children. Because the first wife's children are collecting the Ksuvos Ben Dichron. And only after they're collecting the Ksuvos Ben Dichron will we divide the rest of the Yerusha. So that means that the first wife's children are getting a bigger share of the Yerusha. That's why the Gemara is teaching us. And that could cause a quarrel amongst these half-brothers, like Hashil and Tsuyei. We're not concerned for that. Mamai, how do we know that? Midiktani, because let's learn the words of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Shniyev Yarsheh, Kaidman Yarshu Shlaim. All it said was, make him with the Kadmi, that we satisfy the Ksuba obligation of the second wife first. But if that is satisfied, and there are still assets left over, ha'ikah, if there's still assets left over, shakli, then the first children will get their Ksubas Ben Dichron. Because if the halacha would be that they get nothing, so why does the Mishnah say Kaidman? Kaidman seems to understand that they come first, but that to exclude them. And Tosfos points out, Tosfos the Rimas Kol Ika, even though we said earlier in our shir that sometimes the word Kaidman doesn't just mean comes first, it means that they get and they don't get, says Tosfos that is not the normal definition of Kaidman. And here, we're going to define it as it normally is defined, that they come first, but not that the children of the first wife won't get the ksuvos ben dichron. There's a halacha that we're going to learn in our coming shiur on Daf Tzadik Aleph, that ksuvos ben dichron really is a violation of Hilchos Yerusha. Because Hilchos Yerusha says that all assets that are left should be divided with the Hilchos Yerusha. What does ksuvos ben dichron say? That the people who are entitled to ksubas from the Dikran take their share, which may be a larger share, before we divide the rest of the Yerusha. And therefore, the Mishnah Daf Tzadik Aleph is going to teach us, we only apply the halacha of ksubas from the Dikran if there's a maisa dinner. If there's going to at least be a dinner of assets left that we could divide according to Hilchos Yerusha. If there's going to be a dinner of assets that we could divide according to the proper Hilchos Yerusha, then we'll apply the ksubas din dichrin. So now the question is, if the only assets that were there besides the ksubas din dichrin are the ksuba that's being paid to the second wife or to her yarshim, is that considered like the maisa dinner? Mishmamina says the Gemara, our Mishnah is teaching us the ksuba nasa maisel chaverta, that the ksuba that's being paid to the second wife or to her children can be considered that moiser. Mamai, what's the proof that that is the halacha? Mid the loiktoni yesha moiser dinner. If the halacha would be that besides the ksuba that's being paid to the second wife, we still need to have a moiser dinner in order for the first wife's children to get their ksuba from the dichrin, so shouldn't the Mishnah have said that also have to have enough to pay off the second wife's ksuba? And we also have to have enough for a maisa dinner. The fact that the Mishnah didn't mention that maisa dinner is clearly an indication that the ksuba payment that we're giving to the second wife satisfies the maisa dinner requirement. Vishmamina, a third halacha that could be extrapolated from our Mishnah says, ksubas din dichrin by tarfim mishabdi, that the ksubas din dichrin that children are entitled to, they don't get from assets that the father sold off. These salkadaitach, tarfim mishabdi, if we're going to say that children are entitled to collect the ksubas din dichrin either from, or even from assets that the father had sold off during his lifetime, laisi, why can't the children from the first wife go to the second wife's children and say, yes, you yashined these assets from our father, but there was a lien on them, the ksubas din dichrin? The fact that that isn't the case is a raya that ksubas min dichrin is not to be treated like a choiv payment, as we discussed in our Mishnah. Rather, ksubas min dichrin is treated like a yerusha. And yerusha, if there is money, there's yerusha. And if there isn't money, there isn't yerusha. Maskla Ravashi asks Rashi, Mamai, why are you saying that there's definitely a raya from our Mishnah to all of these halachas? Where the second halacha that we said, that when one is a lot, the first halacha that we said, that one wife was alive when the husband died, and one wife was no longer alive, she predeceased her husband, the halacha is Eloi. There is no ksubas din dichrin. For as we said earlier in the shir, Chazal were concerned that creating such a situation could create osel and suye, could create quarreling. And the Mishnah says kaidman, and doesn't kaidman seem to indicate that the second wife or her children get their ksuba payment first, but not that they don't, that the first children don't get the ksubas din dichrin at all? What it means is kaidman. What the Mishnah means to say is that first we have to satisfy all of the ksuba obligation that we have to the second wife, and then only after we satisfy the obligation can we do nachla, can we do yerusha. But not that it means that there's going to be a ksuba spin and dichrin. And as the Rishonim explained, the word kaidman is a misleading word, if that's what kaidman means. Why did the Mishnah use that word? So the Rishonim explained, because since that word is a word that we need to use in other situations in our Mishnah, it was used in this case as well, even though in this case, the word kaidman, as we learned earlier in the shir, is actually sort of a misleading word, because it could throw us to make a mistake what kaidman means. The chitema yarshu shaynim lamali. So if that's the case, that the yarshim of the first wife are not getting anything, they're not getting the ksuba din dichrin, why are they mentioned? Why do they play a role in our Mishnah? Says the Gemara, either the tani shniv yarshah, Since the Mishnah spoke about the second wife and her Yarshim, Tananam el Yarshim Shtoino, we speak about the first wife as well, but really they have no special role in our Mishnah. The second wife or her children will collect the second wife's ksuba, and then afterwards, the rest of the assets will be divided amongst all the children. Uda Kamet, and continues the Gemara, the other halacha that we learned, the ksuba nasis maisel chaverta, that one ksuba could be considered the maiser, and we could apply the halacha of ksus ben dikrin just based on that ksuba payment. And we don't need to have a maisa dinner besides that, because as we learned earlier in the shiur, if we needed to have a maisa dinner anyway, shouldn't the Mishnah mention it? The halacha is that isn't the case. Our Mishnah happens to be speaking about that case. And as I sort of Rishonim explained, that is the normal situation that there's a Maisa dinner. And that's why the Mishnah didn't have to expressly say it. V'achzbach, says the Gemara, this question is the ksuba payment that the second wife or her children getting. Can that be considered the Maisa dinner or not? Actually, says the Gemara, is a machloikus tanoim. V'achz b'chai v'achz v'moisoi tanoihi. The Tanya, meisa achz b'chai v'achz v'moisoi. Me'an nanis am yichoyim b'nei rishoyna loim l'b'nei ashniya. The children of the first wife who predeceased her husband could say to the children of the second wife who died after their father died, b'nei b'chayv chayv atem. You are coming to collect the chayv. Tulu ksubas imchem, take your ksuba, the tzu, and go further. And we now come in line to get the ksubas benin dichrin. Rav Kiva says that as soon as the husband predeceased his second wife, kofza nachla, the ksubas benin dichrin, b'fnei b'nei rishayna, there is no halacha of ksubas benin dichrin, and l'fnei b'nei shniya, and now there's just going to be regular Hilchis Yerusha. Says the Gemara, what is the Machloikis about Nenas and Rabbi Kiva? Says the Gemara, my lab outcome of Ki. It seems that the Machloikis between them is the Masover, Achas, B'chayiv Achas B'moyis, Yesh Le'b'ksim B'zdechrin, Dalok Suvas Nedechrin will apply. And Masover, Rabbi Kiva's opinion is that Achas B'chayiv V'Achas B'moyis, the whole halacha of subas ben dikrin doesn't apply. Amar Rava, I found the Talmidim, the yeshiva that was studying, and they said the kulama achs b'chayv achs b'moysi yesh l'ksubas ben dikrin. The halacha is that there is ksubas ben dikrin, and the concern that the Gemara expressed earlier in the shiur that maybe it's going to cause a quarrel, we're not concerned for that. V'hacha, the machloikas between Rabbi Kiva and Bananas is about the other subject we discussed in our shiur. Can the ksuba payment be considered the moisa dinner? Buadin, and the same machloikas is bebal chayv kamifki. The same machloikas would apply that let's say the father died and there's a ksubas benin dikrin, the husband died and the ksubas benin dikrin obligations here. But, and there is a moisa dinner, but that Maisa dinner is obligated to debts that the father had. And the question that the Gemara says now is the machloikas is money that's owed for debts, is that considered money that be considered for the Maisa dinner? Or, since that money is owed to others, that money can't be considered the Maisa dinner. Masav ksubanas maisal chaverta. As long as there's money, even though there's an obligation on that money, it doesn't change that money can be considered the Maisa dinner. The ksuba payment cannot be considered Maiser. The Balchayv cannot be considered Maiser. And he says the Gemara, Rabba disagrees on the Rabban and the Bei Rav in explaining the machloikus of Rabbi Kiva and Bananas, but b'achoyv kulam lepligi the meiser. Everybody's going to agree that money that's there, even though it's owed to other people, right now the money's here, and since the money's here, it's considered meiser dinner. Kulam lepligi to have a meiser. Ki pligi, the machloikus is if there was a ksuba left over? If there was a ksuba money, what is the halacha on that ksuba money? Is that ksuba money also be able to be considered the maisa dinner or not? And Rashi explains, why is there a difference between ksuba money and balchoy money? So Rashi explains, in the money that's there, they're all equal partners, the children of the first wife and the children of the second wife. So even though there's an obligation in that money, doesn't change that there's money right here, right now, and all of the Yarshim have equal access to that money. When it comes to the ksuba money, the children of the first wife have no connection to that money. Maisa dinner could only be, money could only be considered maisa money. Money could only be considered maisa money when all of the Yarshim have equal access to that money. The Ritva explains this question somewhat differently. He says that even though paying a bal chayv, paying off debts, is an obligation, and paying off a ksuba is an obligation, the obligation of paying off a ksuba is a much greater obligation than the obligation of paying off a chayv. We're going to learn in our coming shiurim that priyas chayv, the obligation to pay off the chayv, is only a mitzvah. And since the obligation of paying off the ksuba is a greater obligation, so Rekiv Eger, in explaining this ritva, says that when we look at the ksuba money, we don't look at it as if there's money, but it has an obligation to pay the we have to use that money to pay the ksuba. Rather, says Rekiv Eger, the way we look at that money, because of the woman's, because of the strong obligation that there exists, as we often learn, on somebody to pay ksuba, it's not money that's here. It's money that's by the salmona. So we can't take that money into consideration as moisa dinner money, because it's not money that's at all here. And therefore, that money cannot be considered moisa dinner. Money that's owed to bal chayv, so of course we have an obligation, the state has an obligation to pay off the bal chayv. But it's not as if the bal chayv already, says Rekiv Eger, is holding on to the money. And since it's not like the bal chayv is already holding on to the money, that's why that money can be considered maisa dinner.